Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's happened again, this time in our town. Yesterday afternoon, a lone gunman walked into a classroom at UNC Charlotte and began firing, killing two people, wounding four, and changing countless lives forever. University of North Carolina Charlotte Chancellor Philip Dubois called it the saddest day in the school's history. Governor Roy Cooper arrived on campus last night and ordered all state flags to be lowered to half-staff.
This is a tragic day at this great university, the city of Charlotte, and the state of North Carolina. Here on the last day of class, just a few days to graduation, but I know the people in this community, and they will be here for each other.
This hour, we piece together what we know about what happened, what we know about the shooter, about those who lost their lives, and get reaction on how the school handled this horrible tragedy as it unfolded. And we ask the question that's always asked in the aftermath of these senseless events: is this the one that will finally move us to do something? WFAE's Nick De La Canal spent a lot of time on campus yesterday afternoon and evening as events were unfolding. He joins us for the hour, as does WFAE's Sarah D'Elia, who was also talking to people on campus as this unfolded. And this morning, folks are listening to the program around the state on WUNC in Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill, WHQR in Wilmington, and WCQS in Asheville. As usual, we would invite you to join the conversation through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. And this morning, we're going to open the phones a little bit later on. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. Or 800-603-9323. A little later on in the program, we will be joined by UNC Charlotte Chancellor Philip Dubois. But first, Nick, this all began yesterday around 5:40 in the afternoon near the Kennedy Building, in which Information Technology Services is located. Mm-hmm. Take us through what happened.
Well, what we know is the events actually unfolded rather quickly. So, as you said, this happened inside the Kennedy Building, which is very central on campus. It's near the center, right by the university's library. What we know is around 5:40, as you said, a shooter entered the building, entered a room inside the building, and opened fire. Within minutes, campus police and CMPD had been notified of this incident. A campus-wide alert was sent out at 5:50. That's about 10 minutes after the first shots were fired. The entire campus was put on lockdown, and police were able to respond very quickly to the scene. In fact, we heard at a press conference yesterday that the shooter didn't even have time to leave the room before officers had arrived and were able to confront him. And the campus police chief, Jeff Baker, said that one officer basically confronted the shooter, was able to disarm him, and was able to take him into custody.
How does the campus police explain their ability to respond so quickly?
Well, they said that they had been training for this kind of scenario for a while. Of course, they never hoped that something like this would happen. Mm-hmm. But they were alerted by a caller who was on campus, and luckily were nearby, so they were able to get there so quickly.
What kind of weapon was used?
What we heard from the police chief yesterday was that he was armed with a pistol. Later, he may have hedged that, so we're not certain about that, but he initially said it was a pistol.
We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about the shooter, but he was identified as 22-year-old Tristan Andrew Terrell. Was he a student, Sarah, at UNC Charlotte?
The UNCC newspaper has identified him as a former student, and we know very little about him. We know that he at one point lived in Texas and then in the last few years relocated to Charlotte. But besides knowing he was a former student and he's 22 years old, there's really not a whole lot that we can definitely 110% say about him at this moment.
When these things happen around the country, usually relatives are asked, are they surprised? And essentially, he moved to Charlotte, as you said, 2 years ago, and His grandfather said that his actions do not sound like those of his grandson, that, quote, this is not in his DNA. Is it ever?
I mean, it's so often what we hear from family members of these alleged shooters being so surprised of the actions of their loved ones. So it seems like that fits the pattern with the story that we hear time and time and time again around the nation.
Because these shootings tend to have a copycat kind of pattern to them. If it happens here, it'll happen someplace else. Some news people and the folks in New Zealand even refused to say the perpetrator's name in the shooting in New Zealand. Did people on campus seem to concur that we shouldn't give any attention to this guy at all? Or did you talk to anybody about that?
I did not really ask that question to many of the students that I spoke to on campus yesterday. And in fact, when I was on campus, that was still relatively soon after the shooting. So at that time, people still weren't even sure if this shooter was male or female. They weren't sure if maybe there was more than one. So, yeah, the time that I was on campus, that was still a rather fluid situation, and I wasn't able to ask that to anyone.
From what I've seen on social media, I think you have two very different camps of people. You have people that are saying, do not give power to this person by naming them. And people that I've seen have purposely not named him, saying that they're not going to. But then you also saw on Twitter yesterday a flurry of people saying, this is the guy, this is the guy. We want his name known so people know what he did. Mm-hmm. So I think it is something, an issue that people feel really passionate about on both sides.
Did either of you talk to any students who actually knew the shooter once his identity was revealed?
Mm-mm. No.
From what we know at this point in time, do we have any idea of his motivation? Why did this take place yesterday in that room at that time?
No, I think that is a question. That's one of the biggest questions that's still out there right now, and it's certainly one that I know investigators are going to be looking at, as well as also not only just the why of why the shooting was carried out, but also the how. We're still trying to figure out how this shooter even got a hold of this firearm. We're not sure if maybe this is something that he purchased or maybe he obtained from a relative or a friend, and also how he was able to get into the building while armed, and if maybe there was any way to stop him. So, right, that's one of the big questions that we're still asking.
The response by campus police to this incident was remarkably fast and efficient, it seems to me. How did they get him, and did he surrender peacefully when police walked into the classroom where he was still standing?
We really didn't hear very much from the police chief as far as the, you know, the moment by moment actions of the officers. He did say that the shooter didn't say anything when officers confronted him. And he was asked by reporters exactly how that confrontation went down. And he yesterday declined to really go into the specifics, saying that that was going to be a part of the investigation that was continuing.
From what we know, did he surrender peacefully?
Well, I really couldn't say.
Yeah, I don't think we can say.
UNC Charlotte Police Chief Jeff Baker told the media that his officers were able to react quickly, and here's why.
Our dispatch received a call that a suspect was armed with a pistol and had shot several students. We responded. We were able to get into the building quick enough to where we actually took custody of the suspect. He was disarmed and he was taken into custody.
Campus police were also simultaneously able to secure the entire campus and lock it down. The police chief said their system allows them to lock down the campus with the touch of a button. How much do you know about how that works? What happens when they touch that button?
From my understanding, they are able to lock down the entire campus and lock the buildings. For me, that kind of raised a concern with, you know, well, what if you're outside when that happens? I didn't speak to anyone who was locked out of buildings until, you know, later in the evening when they really were not letting anyone inside the buildings. But in the moments after, supposedly police were able to lock down all the buildings around campus.
And that lockdown went until very early this morning, as I understand it, like in the 5 o'clock hour. Mm-hmm. So what happened to the students who were locked out of their dorms, locked out of their classrooms, where they may have kept or had a lot of paraphernalia like driver's licenses and wallets and things like that?
Well, I believe that students were allowed to get back into their dorms. It was mostly the administrative buildings and the classrooms that were on campus that they were not letting people in. In many cases, people were locked down inside the buildings as well, so they were stuck in there for, in some cases, for hours after the shooting until an officer was able to come. Mm-hmm. Officers were able to come into the buildings, check that they were all clear, and then allow the students to leave. I know in the Kennedy building, where the shooting, you know, took place, you know, students and staff members were evacuated from that pretty quickly. And so just this morning, they were allowed to go back in and obtain some of the belongings that they might have left there.
We said that we wanted to hear from people who were usually people who were there. That's who we really like to hear from, or people who had students on the campus at 704-926-WFAE. And Amanda identifies herself as a student at UNC Charlotte and says she was in the building across from Kennedy at the time of the shooting. Good morning, Amanda. What did you, how did this unfold from your perspective?
Forgive me if I'm upset. It was about 5:15, and I was walking with two friends past the Kennedy building to get to Rowe building, because ours is directly across from it. And we had been in class for about 5 minutes, and my professor walked outside, saw people running from the building, and came in and told us to exit out the back exit. We stood out there for about an hour with all the helicopters, cops, and everything. And we knew there was an active shooter, but we didn't know anything about, you know, injuries, anything like that. But then he said that we could leave. So we started walking, and they pulled us in from the Belk Theater, yelling at us to come inside because we were just, like you said, walking freely. And then we sat in there for another hour and a half. We was just waiting for the buildings to be cleared. But I just have to say, as I'm a non-traditional student, like 34 years old back at school, and just to see the social media aspect of this while it was happening was insane. Like, people on Snapchat with the student who was shot in the hallway, all the cops. I mean, it was wild.
Was social media helpful in any way, in your opinion, to what was going on as these events unfolded and nobody knew anything? Was it helpful or was it hurtful, or did it engender comfort or fear?
I have to say, I mean, I would say comfort in the way that at least we knew what was going on. Like, it was actual, like, it wasn't just people arguing or, you know, just hearsay. So I actually knew what was going on, and, you know, cops were on campus, someone was injured. But in the end, it was more fearful, just because it almost started more rumors kind of thing.
Amanda, thank you for your call. Yeah. I'm glad you're safe this morning.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Let's go to Matthew, another student on campus during the shooting who was in a computer lab. Matthew, from your point of view, how did yesterday feel? What did you know, and when did you know it?
Everything seemed very surreal, and campus lockdown. I know immediately we have this policy when it happens, it's run, hide, fight, and the buildings immediately get locked down with a push of a button, and we saw people like banging on the doors, and we let them in because we're like, get inside, we're not letting you guys just be outside in a not locked building. And we were there for a couple hours until cops came by and let us out.
Is that a good policy in your the policy that you just quoted, the run, hide, fight? Is that a good policy in your mind? I have about 20 seconds.
Yeah, I would say it's a pretty good policy because either you're running away from campus, you're hiding on campus, and as a last resort, you fight. I also liked how over the past summer they implemented the button policy to.
And with that, Matthew, I have to let you go. I'm sorry because we're out of time in this segment. When we come back, Chancellor Phil Dubois will join us on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. And this morning on WUNC in Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill, WCQS in Asheville, and WHQR in Wilmington. Chancellor Phil Dubois called yesterday the saddest day, the worst day in the history of UNC Charlotte, that it shakes us to our very core. And Chancellor Dubois joins us by phone now. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
That what you said yesterday pretty much says it all, but now that some time has passed, do you have anything to add?
No, not really. We're beginning the difficult process of recovery, and we have set up a family assistance center for students who either were victimized themselves or knew people who were. We've deployed our counseling staff and opened some public venues on campus like the library and the student union so some community building can happen. I'll be in touch with the families of the two students we lost, Riley and Alice, probably shortly after you and I talk, and then hope to be able to visit the students who were injured and are still in the hospital. We had four students who were shot, three seriously enough to have surgery.
Yeah. Were all the students involved in the shooting, either the wounded or the dead, were they all students?
They were.
Okay. This is a nightmare for any campus. You trained for it. Obviously, your campus police were well trained because they were able to respond very, very quickly. You put policies in place so that if something like this ever happens, you have a way of acting and reacting. But still, you cannot anticipate what this does to you, what it does to your faculty, your staff, your students, and to the reputation of the university. What's it like to go through this?
Well, sadly, I've been through a number of student deaths in my career in a lot of different circumstances. I was president of the University of Wyoming when the gay student Matthew Shepard was murdered. I lost eight students in a car crash out there. And even at UNC Charlotte, for a variety of reasons, you have student deaths now and again. But this one, obviously, this just unimaginable violence within a campus building is something that we can't imagine. And you're right, we trained for it. In fact, it was just in October that we had a full live drill surrounding standing up a family assistance center in the case we had a mass casualty event on the campus, and you, of course, don't think that you'll ever have to use that training, but boy, it sure came into being this year and this day. Our police were magnificent. Charlotte Mecklenburg, they went right toward the sound of the gunfire. They were backed up by Chief Baker, who came in shortly after the initial officers. Then we had the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department here, and they all did a spectacular job. And we have a system on campus whereby we can lock down most campus buildings with a single push of a button, and that worked as well. So, you know, we're just lucky we didn't have a much bigger tragedy, if you can think of that as luck.
Yeah, Chief Baker, your campus police chief, Jeff Baker, told reporters late yesterday that the shooter never had time to get out of the room. And we have talked this morning with reporters who were talking to others who are obviously not in that classroom when that happened. But how do you explain your police department's ability to react so quickly, because it resulted in more lives being saved, to react so quickly and to have him surrender peacefully? What has your police chief told you?
Well, they had some kind of meeting at the time, and so they were all closely assembled and were able to get there quickly. I don't know that I know all the specific details. Let's just say these folks train. We have 50 sworn police officers on the campus, and ordinarily, of course, this is a very safe place. We've never obviously had that kind of situation, but we, you know, I commend them for their heroism. It was just amazing what they were able to do.
You confirmed earlier this morning on another radio station the names of the two students who died in the shooting yesterday. Who were they?
Riley Howell was from Waynesville, North Carolina, and Ellis Parlier was from
Midland,
North Carolina. Riley was just 21, and Ellis was just 19. And I think the Ellis's last name is pronounced Paul Lear. It's spelled P-A-R-L-I-E-R.
The wounded were Drew Piscaro from Apex, 19 years old, Sean DeHart, 20, of Apex, Rami, I think it's Al-Ramatan, of 20 years old, from Saudi Arabia, and Emily Haupt, 23, from Charlotte. What do you know about the extent of their injuries?
I don't think I'm permitted by federal privacy laws to give you any detail. I'm just told that at least at the time our dean of students was there, they were all doing okay and were expected to have satisfactory recovery.
The governor, Roy Cooper, Senator Tom Tillis, Representative Richard Hudson, all expressed, as you would imagine, shock and horror, and assured people that their thoughts were with the UNC community, UNC Charlotte community. Representative Hudson went to school there at UNC Charlotte and added that, quote, our prayers are with victims, their families, and the 49er community. That seems to be standard rhetoric following these events. Do these comments have any meaning anymore? Do they hold any comfort for you or anybody on your campus this morning?
I think we value every expression of support from every person who can understand that when you lose two young people to this kind of violence, that it's a horrible tragedy. And I'm not going to worry about interpreting those remarks for myself or any member of my community. I think we all appreciate having the community stand behind us. So this is a very blessed institution in so many ways. As you know, Mike, we're really one of the great success stories of higher education, and we will continue to be that. But for now, we have to focus on these families and their situations and the tragedy that they've gone through.
How do you see your campus recovering?
Well, I take, I guess, some solace in having watched other institutions recover from similar tragedies. You know, you don't want to be defined by a violent moment on your campus. You want to be known for being a strong educational institution. And when you look at places like Virginia Tech or Northern Illinois or other university or even high schools that have gone through this kind of thing, they manage to work their way past it, but they never forget. And that's important as well.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Well, I think we're going to have some conversations about how we honor the memory of these students. And as you probably know, we're facing graduation in a little over a week and commencement ceremonies. And that's a time usually for celebration, and it will be for about 4,800 students who are going to go through graduation and get their degrees after long years of work. But we want to be judicious and sensitive to the fact that it's not an ordinary commencement.
It's too early, I'm sure, for you to really analyze what happened yesterday and what went right, what went wrong. But what would you say to students, faculty, staff, parents of students at the university this morning? What would you say to them?
Well, you know, in terms of what went right and what went wrong, we'll wait for some time. We'll do a full after-action review with independent external reviewers to go through what we did and when we did it and sort of critique how we did. I believe, based on what I know this morning, that lives were saved, even though lives were lost. And we will get together this afternoon at 6 o'clock with our students. And, Niners are tough.
Phil Dubois is the Chancellor of University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Thank you for joining us this morning on what I'm sure is a very difficult day for you and everybody on the campus this
morning.
Thank
you, Mike. Thank you.
You're very welcome. We invited people to join us via email at charlottetalks@wfae.org or on Facebook or Twitter at Charlotte Talks or on the telephone at 704-926-WFAE or 800-603-WFAE. Peggy emails, both of my sons go to UNC Charlotte. When I got the first text saying both of us are safe, don't worry, I knew it was a shooting before I called. I was sobbing. I only cried regarding a shooting at Sandy Hook. It is a completely different feeling when it hits close to home. I'm very impressed with police response. Sarah D'Elia is here from WFAE News, along with Nick De La Canal from WFAE News. What do we know about this shooter? I mean, how much do we really know? Anything?
I would say we really don't know. I mean, we really, in a case like this, you really don't want to speculate about anything ever in the news business, but especially as something is developing. I mean, I left the station around midnight last night, and I came in early, and there were more details. So, you know, things are moving very quickly. I think all we can really confirm is the alleged shooter's name, that he's 22 years old, Tristan Andrew Terrell, and that at one point he lived in Texas. He moved to Charlotte in the last few years, and that he's a former student of UNCC. And that's really all we can say.
And evidently, CMPD told WBTV that they rushed to what they described as the suspect's house on 36th Street in Charlotte, which I believe is in the NoDa area near the Blue Line. Mm-hmm. How were they able to identify how quickly where he lived? Do we know?
Well, they could have pulled his voter record and found his address that way. They could have also performed a background check, and they could have found his address that way as well.
UNC Charlotte Chief of Police Charlie Baker said officers were able to take the accused shooter into custody before he was even able to leave the building where the shooting took place.
I can't tell you the sadness of the entire community to know that a situation like this has occurred on our campus. We're all pretty much devastated to know anything like this. Unfortunately, it did occur. We responded immediately, and as I said, we were able to take the suspect into custody. We also, at the same time, simultaneously secured the entire campus. We were able to lock it down through a system that we utilize, and we can simply depress one button and lock down the majority of campus.
Gene Deisinger is a former deputy chief of police and director of threat assessment services at Virginia Tech, where shooting took place. I think 37 or 38 students lost their lives there in the early 2000s. He's now the president of Deisinger Consulting, where he consults people on security issues. Gene, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. How would you characterize the efficiency and the quickness with which university police reacted in this situation?
Well, from what I've seen so far, I think the police are to be commended for the responsivity to the crisis that was occurring. It sounds like emergency notification happened quickly, containment of the threat happened quickly. Sounds to me like people were well-trained, well-prepared, and ready for the unfortunate eventuality of having to respond at some point.
Yeah. The university sent out what they call a Niner alert, because they're the 49ers, which read, shots reported near Kennedy, run, hide, fight, secure yourself immediately, monitor email. And they also put a link on that alert to a website. You're an expert on school lockdowns. You helped Virginia Tech revise their policies in the aftermath of that tragic shooting several years ago on their campus. Is the advice sent out on that Niner alert, run, hide, fight, secure yourself, the right way to do things?
Well, I'm not going to judge their actions. I think what we're always trying to do when we're aware of a critical situation is give the community as quickly as possible actionable information of what to do to minimize further harm. And that's always a balance between getting it out quickly and getting sufficient information and detail in there to help people find their way. In that message, there's an opportunity to access supplemental information through a website if people need further information. You're trying to draw people's attention to the fact that there is an emergency, that they need to be attentive and have high situational awareness for their own safety and that of those around them.
UNC Charlotte has more than 26,500 students and about 3,000 faculty and staff. It's a very open campus. The Lynx Blue Line light rail stopped there just a couple of months ago. That ties the school to NoDa and into the downtown area of Charlotte through South End to Pineville. And it's also near two interstates and major local thoroughfares. Is there really any way to keep some place like that free from this sort of a tragedy?
Well, I mean, the question is too narrow, Mike. I mean, we live in a free and open society, and if we're our focus is on eliminating risk, I don't know how to do that in a free society, and I'm not willing to live in a totalitarian one. Mm-hmm. I think what we've seen across campuses over the last 10 to 12 years since the tragedy at Virginia Tech, particularly on campuses, but in a variety of other sectors as well, significant attention to doing what we can to prevent harm where possible, to be prepared to respond to it if, despite our best preventative efforts, bad things can still happen in great places, and to be prepared to help our communities recover and to foster resiliency in the aftermath. And I was pleased to hear Chancellor DeBois talking about those last components of focusing on recovery, which you start doing really during the midst of the crisis. And that will be a long and ongoing process for them if their experience is like ours at Virginia Tech.
So let's talk about that, because you were brought into Virginia Tech to analyze their security procedures and change them where necessary. And I'm sure that students, faculty, and staff there were highly traumatized by what happened. Do you have any advice on how to regain any sense of security on a campus when these things happen?
Well, Mike, I would just clarify. I was one member of a large team of folks who was dedicated to the health, safety, and well-being of that campus, and many of us worked diligently to support the processes that had been in place prior to the crisis, to look at what needed to be modified and enhanced, and then to build that to the best of our ability. I think there's no one answer that fits for all campuses or even all members within that campus. What I've seen is that open communication and ongoing engagement with the community. This event likely will foster a lot of concerns about safety. It draws our attention to our vulnerabilities, real and perceived. I think that's going to call for open and honest dialogues about what the issues are, what's done to attempt to prevent harm where possible, and what we can all do, what our collective responsibility is. To foster the safety of our communities.
What do you see as the most immediate steps UNC Charlotte should be taking or considering in the next few days, few weeks, few months?
I heard it in the chancellor's comments. Right now, the focus is on the victims and the survivors and their families, the needs of the responders who dealt with the situation, and with the broader community traumatized at various levels. My attention right now would be on all of those elements. Clearly, law enforcement will be focusing on the investigation and the fact-finding to better understand what's happening. And we heard the chancellor comment that at some point, when the facts are available to them, they'll do a thorough and diligent after-action review. Those would be all things that I would be looking at.
Gene Deisinger is former Deputy Chief of Police and Director of Threat Assessment Services at Virginia Tech in the aftermath of their shooting, and the president now of Deisinger Consulting. Thanks, Gene, for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Charlotte Talks in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're also on WUNC in Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill this morning, WCQS in Asheville, WHQR in Wilmington. You can contact us through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org, through Twitter, or at 704-926-WFAE or 800-603-WFAE, which translates to 9323. There was video yesterday, Sarah, of the shooter, being escorted into CMPD headquarters. Mm-hmm. And a reporter asked the alleged shooter, what happened? His response was really difficult to understand, but it sounded like he said, I just ran into a classroom and shot the guy. Is there evidence that this attack was focused on one person and was not intended to be a mass shooting? Do we know anything about this yet?
I just don't think we can report on that confidently yet until we hear more from the police. What the TV, that report heard, I mean, that could only be a very small part of that. That could have been taken out of context. So I know that there have been various rumors that have been kind of circulated throughout social media. And I'm even hesitant to repeat any of those because we could find out that they're just totally unfounded. So
I will say that that question was asked to the police chief, Jeff Baker, last night by a reporter, and he declined to give a more specific answer, saying that again was part of the investigation, though I do expect that we will find something out about that sometime in the future.
And our guest just a few minutes ago, Gene Deisinger says we have to be very careful because a lot of the information that usually comes out toward the beginnings of an investigation in the immediate aftermath turns out to be wrong. Yesterday, campus police chief Jeff Baker said the suspect was not someone on our radar. But now CMPD, the media, and others have probably had enough time to comb through his social media accounts. Did we glean any information from any posts that he might have made? Do we know that he had social media accounts? I mean, everybody does, it seems. Was why and should he have been on radar if we've gleaned anything from those accounts?
I think those are really good questions, and I think we still have a lot of details that we just need to find out and confirm before we can report on it.
Martin emails, this shooting is horrible and terrible. At the same time, let's not forget that three people were killed by shootings over the weekend and that Charlotte is heading, sadly, for a record year of gun violence. Each shooting and each victim deserves our thoughts and prayers. It seems we only get upset when a shooting occurs and children or houses of worship are involved, and that is not right. You had some time yesterday, Nick, to talk to some students and get their reaction to not what was going on in real time, the actual fact that they knew that something had occurred, then the lockdown that shut them out. And you went into, I think, you talked to two seniors who were inside studying at a campus Chick-fil-A. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. I spoke with a number of students who are on campus. Yeah, there were two seniors I spoke with. Right. They're inside this dining area on campus, which was right across from the Kennedy building. And they said they were inside when there was a group of students who came sprinting into the building. They were screaming. They said one had blood on her face. Another had blood on her arms and shirt. And were screaming that someone was shooting on campus. So at that point, employees took the group of students into a back room where they sheltered for about a half hour, they said. And of course, at that time, everything was unfolding. So they described it as very tense. You know, they didn't know who the shooter was, if there was more than one. And of course, they were in this building that's right next door to where the shooting had just taken place.
Right.
So they were in there for about a half hour. You know, I spoke with another student who was inside the campus gym at the time when the announcement came over the loudspeaker, and employees turned off the lights. They shut off the music, told all the students to basically find shelter in the gym. You know, people were hiding in closets at the time. He said he was inside there for what felt like about an hour before police were able to come in and check the all clear. And then, of course, there was also this concert that was going to be happening at the football stadium with a rapper, Waka Flocka. Mm-hmm. He was going to be performing because this was the final day of classes. And so there were students lined up outside the stadium waiting to get in when this news came out. They had to open up the stadium gates, and the students filed in and had to find some place to shelter in the stadium. You know, we also heard from teachers who were inside classrooms with their students and barricaded doors. You know, there was one adjunct professor who told us that the doors to her classroom open outward, so students actually went and got computer cords to bind the hinges, actually. Again, some of these people were on lockdown for hours inside the building basically just had to wait for police officers to come and sweep the buildings, make sure that there wasn't any other threat, and then escort the students outside to safety.
You had a friend on campus, Sarah, Nina Bailey, who is a doctoral student and a research graduate assistant at the university and a professor at Queens. Mm-hmm. And she was texting you last night from a locked down classroom.
Yeah, that was one of the scariest texts I've ever gotten in my life, was a friend telling me that they were in a room that, or not in a room, but on a campus where there was an active shooter. It was just horrible to get that text, and for her to not know all the details and for me to be trying to figure out the details. And basically what happened was she was assisting teaching a class, and it was a joyous day. It was the last day of classes. Mm. Students were presenting their final presentations, and they were actually getting pizza for the students. So she goes outside to try and get the pizza that they had ordered, and she bumped into the woman whose class she was helping teach, and she said, "We're on a lockdown situation. You need to go back, and we need to make sure everyone's secured." They felt very safe, but it it was also, they were there for several hours. And then when they were finally able to get out, because as we've reported, they were clearing, the police were clearing the room by room to make sure nobody was left behind. Nina had to sit with students in her car because a lot of them lived on campus and they couldn't get back to their apartments. And they were trying to contact their families and a lot of them didn't have their phones on them anymore. So it really is something that hits close to home for a lot of us, I know, especially being so close to UNC Charlotte.
All these events like this make the national news, and some of the presidential candidates have been talking about this, either to reporters or on the stump. Bernie Sanders said the UNC Charlotte community is uniting to deal with another horrific instance of gun violence in this country. We must move aggressively to end the epidemic of gun violence, which claims more lives every day. Beto O'Rourke: my thoughts are with the UNC Charlotte community during this painful and difficult moment. We must act now to prevent gun violence by following the lead of the young people marching, the moms demanding action, and advocates across the country who refuse to live in fear any longer. Kamala Harris commented. Cory Booker commented. These are all Democrats. Have Republicans had anything to say about this?
I've been looking at kind of the reaction locally here from our local leaders in Charlotte. I think the response has certainly been more amplified on the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. That is true at the national level. Also, you know, here locally, actually, you know, just this morning we heard from one of our council members, Greg Phipps, saying that, you know, our city council may be looking at trying to advocate for stronger gun laws. Of course, they don't really have any power in that arena. Any stronger gun laws would have to come from the General Assembly or Congress, and we haven't seen much meaningful action in any of those legislative bodies.
And it's a Second Amendment issue, which is a constitutional issue. Our Lisa Wharf, WFAE's Lisa Wharf, spoke earlier today with another Democrat, that would be Charlotte's mayor, Vi Lyles.
What have you learned at this point?
Well, we haven't learned much that's different or new from about 11 or 12. Of course, we've got the shooter, 22 years old. He's been charged with 2 counts of murder and 4 counts of attempted murder. The campus lockdown has been lifted, I understand. And I just want to say that, you know, they're not the words to express what it means to have a shooting at a place where people come to learn and grow and plan for their future. I believe that the UNC campus police were heroic in their efforts to work with this. And now we're going to be joined by the CMPD with the investigation and any help that we need. The governor has really emphasized whatever we need to have happen, FBI, whatever resources that the state needs to provide, he will make sure that that happens for us.
What have you heard from school leaders?
You know, all the way, when this happened, I was still in the office, and immediately after learning from the chancellor's staff that he was on a flight, I thought that I need to notify the governor. This is a state university, something we're all proud of, a system that we're all proud of, and the governor immediately said, I'm on my way. He arrived a little bit after 10 at the same time that the chancellor did. And we've worked together. I can't express my appreciation for everyone on the chancellor's team on that campus, working with CMPD and MEDIC. It was really a well-coordinated response. Now we've got to do the work to figure out what are the questions. Why, how, you know, all of those things have to be answered now as much as we can. So the investigation part has ended. But at the same time, we have to just remember that these are people with lives and families, and this is our city. And I'm just not quite sure how we're going to begin to address what I see almost as a cloud over our city with more violence and shooting. We're going to have to work harder as a community.
Your role as city council is somewhat limited in this respect. I mean, there's CMPD that's looking over the investigation. How do you see your role moving forward? Is that one of support? Is it one of advocacy at this point?
Right now, our role is to work with that university campus and the chancellor. And provide whatever resources he needs for making that campus feel safe again. You know, that's what people really want. They want to know that they can personally feel safe. And so whatever things we need to institute and the guidance of the many experts in the field, we're going to look at those. And then we're going to step back. And this is one of the things I believe that our council and me, I believe in. Assess what happens. Figure out what we can do better. And make sure that we do it through the lens of community and community engagement and knowing that the people that live in this city are the most important asset we have. And we've got to create a place where they feel their personal safety is first and foremost.
How do you want to see the community and the city support of that coming together and starting this healing, but also starting this self-reflection?
Well, I think it's self-reflection, but I also think that, you know, you have to take a very serious analytical approach to this. So we're going to start doing that after we get through that place where we can have that kind of conversation. But the first and foremost conversation is about, you know, making sure that those victims, those injured and those that died are treated well, their families have access to the counseling, the campus has access to the counseling. And then when we have that part addressed through our community, I hope that all of our houses of worship will address this over the weekend. I hope that where we gather, we'll have an honest conversation about how to deal with this and what makes people feel better about being able to send their children to a university campus. And we'll listen and reflect on that. And that's when we start thinking, okay, this is what the community has asked for. What can we now do? But I all of us know that this is about something that's greater than one shooting. It's been shootings the last several weeks. It's just been endemic of so much that I just can't grasp all of it at this point.
As far as gun violence and addressing that, of course, in this case, there's a lot of details we don't know. But going forward, is there things that you would like to see, laws that you'd like to see change at the state level?
You know, there are going to be questions like that that we're not going to have answers to immediately. This is not something that locally we can do. This is something that has to be addressed through what I would consider everyone, the bipartisan support that we have. In addition to talking with the governor, I spoke with Senator Berger and Speaker Moore to let them know this experience was happening in Charlotte, and we need their support. Now, what does support mean? We will have to work with them to determine it.
That's Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles. Ms. Lyles, thank you very much.
Thank you. God bless our city.
Malcolm Graham also said something this morning that others have said in the aftermath of these all too frequent events.
This is becoming too normal in America, and we have to have the fortitude, the moral courage to do something about it. And the answers are right in front of us.
Malcolm Graham knows what he's talking about. He's a former state senator and a city councilman, former city councilman. His sister, Cynthia Hurd, was killed in the 2015 shooting at Charleston's Emmanuel AME Church. And he represented the university area for 16 years. Lisa Worf asked him earlier today what went through his mind when he heard about this shooting.
What went through my mind is here's two more families now who will be in great pain for the loss of loved ones. A university will now write this in their history books as a dark day in the chapter of the life of this grand university, and this community, they will struggle with it. But it's a problem that we've been dealing with before, the proliferation of guns. We don't know the modus of the shooting. That will come out later. But we do know that, yet again, in a public space, a university setting, or a church, or a movie theater, or a concert, or a nightclub, people are being killed in massive and mass shootings in public space, and the tool of choice are guns.
We'll leave you with this thought from Jeffrey on Twitter, who says, just a reminder that today teachers are marching in Raleigh. One of their demands is money for more counseling services. If lawmakers won't do the right thing on gun control, the least they can do is properly fund mental health services. We will be continuing to follow this story as it unfolds here throughout the day and the weeks ahead on WFAE. I want to thank Nick De La Canale and Sarah DeLeer for joining us this morning, as well as Chancellor Phil Dubois from UNC Charlotte. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.